Okay, imagine a really, really long molecule, like a polymer chain, just constantly folding and bumping into itself. It's almost like trying to fold a fitted sheet, you know? Just chaotic, lots of self-interaction happening.
Right, tangled spaghetti.
Exactly. Now, you might think figuring this out is just for like super specialized scientists, but here's the cool part. The math involved, it actually links up to something that seems totally different: magnetism.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? How the tools for understanding magnets are, well, surprisingly useful for these tangled molecules, too. It suggests there's some deeper connection in how these complex systems behave near their tipping points.
Yeah. So today, for this deep dive, we're digging into a paper you brought up. It's a 1972 piece by Dom and Joyce. Pretty dense stuff from JPhys, solid state physics. And our mission basically is to pull out the key ideas. What were they saying about polymer chains where the different parts repel each other? It sounds niche, maybe, but there's a lot of depth there and some interesting history, too. Absolutely. And for everyone listening, look, you might be coming at this from different angles. Maybe you're prepping for a polymer science discussion, maybe trying to get your head around statistical mechanics fundamentals, or, you know, maybe you're just curious how scientists model complicated stuff.
Whatever the reason, yeah. We're going to try and cut through that density and, highlight the really interesting bits.
So what's the plan? How are we breaking this down?
Okay, so first we'll look at why it's actually so hard to model these interacting chains in the first place, the challenges involved.
Right.
Then we'll see how they simplified things using a lattice model, like putting the chain on an imaginary grid. Makes it more tractable.
Okay.
After that, we'll get into something called cluster expansions. It's a way to systematically deal with all those repulsions.
Cluster expansions.
Got it. And then comes the really neat part, the surprising connection to magnetism. We'll touch on the Ising model, the spherical model.
The magnetism link.
Yeah. And finally, we'll talk about exponents, these numbers that tell you how things change and maybe where some of the theories start to show their limits.
There's like a plan. Okay, let's dive into that first challenge then. Repulsive interactions. Dom and Joyce are focused on chains where bits don't want to be near each other.
Exactly. They start with the sort of baseline idea, the Gaussian chain model, this
Yeah.
flexible, randomly wiggling chain.
Right, the basic picture.
But then, to add the pushing away part, they introduce what's called a pseudo-potential. It's equation one in the paper for those following along.
A pseudo potential. So it's like a mathematical shortcut for that repulsion.
Pretty much, yeah. Instead of tracking every single atom interaction, it gives you an effective repulsion between segments.
Okay. But then they run into trouble.
They do. If you try to use standard math tools like expanding things in a power series based on this interaction parameters, that's equation three. It doesn't work so well.
Oh, so.
Well, the expansion they get might not even be valid, might not converge in the very region you care about most when Z gets large, which happens for long chains.
Ah, so the tool breaks down right when you need it.
Exactly. It's a fundamental difficulty with that direct approach.
Okay. So if the direct math is tricky, what's the alternative? You mentioned a lattice.
Right. That's the clever move. Instead of a continuous chain, imagine the polymer taking steps on a 3D grid, like a random walk on a Tinker Toy structure.
Okay, moving point to point on a grid.
And whenever two parts of this walk land on the same grid point, they interact. There's an interaction energy, or weight, they call W. That's equation seven.
W. And how does that relate to repulsion?
It's linked to temperature, and essentially via a Boltzmann factor.
Yeah.
If the temperature is incredibly high, beta goes to zero and W goes to zero. It's just a free random walk, no interactions.
Okay, high temp, no interaction.
But if you cool it way down, beta goes to infinity, W approaches minus one. And W re represents the self-avoiding walk. Anytime the walk tries to land on an already occupied site, it's forbidden.
Ah, so W is solution one is the extreme repulsion case. It can't cross itself at all.
Precisely. So this lattice model neatly captures the range from no interaction to full self-avoidance.
And why is this lattice version better? What are the advantages?
Well, several things. First, people had already done a lot of computer simulations generating numerical data for self-avoiding walks, the W adheres one case, on lattices. So there's data to compare with.
Okay, existing data helps.
Second, and this is a big one, this lattice polymer problem looks mathematically very similar to the Ising model of a ferromagnet. Spins on a lattice pointing up or down.
Right, the magnet connection again. How does that?
It means we can borrow a whole bunch of concepts and mathematical techniques that were developed for magnets and apply them here. It's a powerful analogy.
Okay, that's clever. Anything else?
Yeah. Also, for regular lattices, there are often exact mathematical results available for things called lattice green functions, which are basically related to the probability of the walk returning to the origin. Using those can simplify calculations.
Got it. So, lattice model, simpler, connects to magnets, uses known math tools. Makes sense. Now, how do they actually use this model? You mentioned generating functions.
Right. Generating functions are like mathematical bookkeeping tools. Mm-hmm. They let you package up information about all possible walks of different lengths.
You need a catalog.
Sort of. They define functions px, rx, qx, where the coefficient of xn tells you something about walks of n steps. Like how many total n-step walks are there, or how many return to the origin, or how many end at a specific point. Equations 8, 9, 10.
Okay, so these functions count the walks. How do the interactions, the W factor, come in?
That's where the cluster expansion comes in. The idea is to start with the simple random walk, W0, and then add corrections based on powers of W. It's like perturbation theory.
Okay, treat W as small and build up the complexity.
Exactly. They look at the first order correction, proportional to just WM. This corresponds to walks that have exactly one point where two segments occupy the same lattice site.
One self-intersection.
Right. They show diagrams for this in figure one. One for open chains, one for closed loops or polygons. And they derive the generating functions for these single interaction walks. It's equations 17 and 18.
Okay, that's the first step. Then they go to W squared, two interactions.
Yep. Now, it gets more complex because there are different ways two interactions can happen. They make this important distinction between ladder diagrams and non-ladder diagrams.
Ladder versus non-ladder, what's the difference?
Ladder diagrams, shown in figures 2ABC and 3ABC, are kind of sequential. The interactions happen along the chain without complex crossings. Think of them like rungs on a ladder connecting two strands of the polymer path.
Okay, like simple bumps.
Whereas the non-ladder diagrams, like second and third, involve more complicated configurations, where parts of the chain that are far apart along the contour can still interact. They sort of cross over.
Ah, more tangled up.
Exactly. And these non-ladder types require introducing new generating functions, R3EX and R4X, to keep track of them properly. Equations 21 onwards, they capture these crossing events.
Okay, so the expansion gets complicated quickly with these different diagram types. But what's the goal? What physical property are they trying to calculate with all this?
A key one is the size of the polymer. Specifically, the mean square end-to-end distance. How far apart, on average, are the start and end points of the chain after end steps? Let's call it R squared.
Right, a measure of how spread out the polymer is.
To get R squared when interactions are present, so RWs, they need to modify their generating functions again. They introduce QX in equation 27, which keeps track of the endpoint position.
So the generating functions now know about the size, too?
Yep. And by expanding these functions in powers of W, they can find how R squared changes. They calculate the term proportional to W, equation 31, and then the terms proportional to WA, equation 32.
Does the non-ladder stuff affect the size?
It does. They show how the non-ladder term contributes to the mean square distance in equation 38. And then they summarize the results for the main generating functions. P for total walks, R for returns to origin, and P2 related to R squared, all expanded up to the second order in W, that's equation 39, gives a picture of how interactions start to affect counts and size.
Right. Now, you mentioned Brute before and this link to the spherical model of magnetism. Where does that fit in again?
Ah, yes. This is a crucial connection. Dom and Joyce highlight this finding by Brute. If you take only the ladder diagrams we talked about and you sum them all up, not just to order Boot War, but all orders, specifically for the self-avoiding case, W is found to 1.
The sum of all ladder graphs at W is equaling Nidus 1.
The result turns out to be mathematically identical to the solution for the spherical model of a ferromagnet.
Wow, so just one type of interaction diagram in the polymer problem matches a whole magnetic model.
Exactly. The spherical model is another simplified model of magnetism, different from the Ising model, but still important. It's a deep insight. The collective behavior captured by these ladder graphs and polymers mirrors the collective behavior in this magnetic system.
That is remarkable. Does it only work for W equals Nidus 1?
Well, Brute found it for WR equals 1. But Dom and Joyce generalized this. They use techniques from Polya and terminology from Uhlenbeck and Ford involving rooted ladder polygons.
Rooted ladder polygons.
Okay.
Think of ladder-like closed loops, but they don't interact right at the starting point, the root. They show these can be built from a primitive loop with other ladder bits attached, figures 4 and 5.
Like decorating a basic loop?
Kinda. They introduce a generating function, SXW, for these attachments, equation 55. It involves counting connected ladder graphs.
Okay.
And this leads to a neat functional equation, 62, that connects the generating function for all rooted ladder polygons, S, with this attachment function, S, and the return to origin function, R.
So they found a relationship between these different ways of counting ladder diagrams?
Yes. And from that, they can explicitly define the contribution of just the ladder diagrams to the main generating functions Rx, W, and Px, W, equations 63 and 68. They call these RL and PL.
Ladder parts. And they can also find the ladder contribution to the mean square distance, equation 71.
And if you plug in W equals 1 into these ladder-only results,
then the equation simplifies significantly, equation 73. And bingo, you recover the spherical model results for susceptibility and energy. It confirms the connection holds generally for the ladder approximation.
Okay, so summing the ladder diagrams gives the spherical model. What about the connection to the Ising model you mentioned earlier, and this idea of critical behavior?
Right, the analogy extends. They also relate the full polymer problem, not just ladders, for any BOU, to the King model, which is closely related to the Ising model of a ferromagnet.
Another magnetic model link.
Yeah. And this is helpful because we know a lot about critical behavior in these magnetic models, phase transitions, critical points, exponents.
Exponents. Yeah. These describe how things change near a transition point, right? Like how the size scales with n.
Exactly. For the polymer, we know the behavior at W equals 0, ideal random walk. The generating functions have singularities described by certain exponents, like gamma 1 for P, X, ES, 0, C, equation 74. And we also know from simulations and other theories that for the self-avoiding walk, W equals 1, the behavior near its critical point is different with different exponents, like gamma prox 43, equation 76.
So the exponents change between W is 0 and W minus 1. Where does the change happen?
That's the key question. Dahm and Joyce, drawing on the magnetic analogy, conjectured that the change in exponent happens precisely at W is 0.
Only at W is 0, why there?
The argument, sort of, is that going from W is negans 1, standard self-avoiding, to even stronger repulsion, negans 1, forbidding nearest neighbor returns, etc., shouldn't fundamentally alter the long-range scaling behavior described by the exponents.
Okay.
But crossing W zeros is different. If W becomes even slightly positive, it means segments attract each other. This leads to a completely different phenomenon, polymer collapse. So W zero seems to be a special dividing line.
Attraction versus repulsion makes a big difference.
A huge difference. This idea also explains why their cluster expansion in W's equation 39 behaves strangely.
Yeah.
Usually expansions are around well-behaved points, but here they're expanding around W0, which is itself a critical point where exponents change.
Expanding around a singularity.
Yes, which is why this series might have issues, like a zero radius of convergence, unlike typical gas expansions. Though maybe techniques like Pode approximants could still extract info.
Okay, so the ladders connect to the spherical model, and the exponents seem to change right at W00. What about those non-ladder diagrams, the crossing ones? Do they do anything interesting?
They do. Dahm and Joyce look at the expected mathematical form of R3x, the simplest non-ladder generating function, equation 50-51. And here's another subtlety.
Oh. More complexity.
They predict that specifically in three dimensions, these non-ladder terms can introduce logarithmic factors into the scaling laws.
Logarithms.
Like ln1x. Yeah.
Exactly like that. It happens when a combination involving the dimension, lambda equals 32 for 3D random walks, becomes an integer. Their predicted forms for R3 and R4 explicitly include ln1x terms, equations 52-53.
So the simple power laws might not be the whole story in 3D.
Potentially. Now, interestingly, when they calculate the mean square distance R squared up to order WLI, that logarithmic term seems to cancel out, equation 38.
Oh, okay, so maybe it's not important.
Well, they caution that this cancellation might just be accidental at second order. It might not cancel out when you include higher order non-ladder terms, WO, etc.
So logs might still be lurking in there. Subtle.
Very subtle. Okay, so they have these expansions, ladder results, non-ladder predictions.
Mm-hmm.
How do they test them?
Good question.
They use the spherical model connection. Since the sum of ladder graphs is the spherical model solution, they can work backwards. They calculate things from the known spherical model solution and see if it matches their ladder expansion terms.
Clever. Using the analogy as a check.
Exactly. They calculate the critical point XCW from the spherical model, equation 92, and expand it in WAQ 93-94. And it perfectly matches the bulk terms they got from their direct ladder expansions. It works.
Nice confirmation. What about the critical behavior near that point?
They analyze that too for 3D, lambda equal Q.
Yeah.
They derive the asymptotic form of the non-ladder part, PNLW, near the critical point, using the spherical model, equation 99.
And compare it to the expected form.
Right, comparing to equation 88. It shows consistency, but also highlights limitations. The simple two-parameter theory starts to break down when W isn't small.
What's the two-parameter theory again?
It's basically the assumption that the polymer's properties, like its scaled size, RWN, depend only on a single combined variable, usually something like WN lambda 1.
Ah, like everything collapses onto one curve.
Yes. And their analysis suggests this is really only an approximation valid for small W. For larger W, stronger interactions, things are more complex.
Okay. And they do the same for the size R squared.
Yep. Similar analysis for the mean square distance, equations 101, 102, comparing with the expected form EQ89. Again, it supports the latter results, but shows the two-parameter idea is limited, especially for finite W.
Got it. Limited applicability of the simpler theories.
They also briefly mentioned polygons. Closed loops fit this framework too, though it's more complicated. And they extend the analysis beyond 3D, considering general lambda, which is like the spherical model with longer range interactions.
General dimensions.
This leads to general asymptotic forms for the ladder and non-ladder parts, equations 106, 107, which connect back to the expected power law behaviors near criticality, EQ 108.
Okay, consistent picture across dimensions. But what about those logs in 3D?
Right, coming back to lambda equal 3. The spherical model analysis reinforces the idea that you might get power laws modified by logarithms. For instance, the ratio of interacting walks to random walks might behave like n to some power times log n, equation 114.
So the logs persist in the spherical model view, too.
It seems so. But they stress again how hard these log factors would be to reliably detect in numerical simulations of self-avoiding walks. They're very subtle corrections.
Makes sense. Hard to spot a log correction on top of a power law.
Definitely. Finally, they briefly touch on actual numbers. Joyce himself did work calculating the coefficients in the expansions for specific lattices, like the face-centered cubic FCC lattice, equation 7881.
Getting concrete values.
And calculating the dominant singular parts of the generating functions. They also compare to the continuum limit, the Gaussian model.
Off the lattice.
Yeah. There, the distribution of the end-to-end distance is known exactly, and you can calculate Rx, EQ84. Interestingly, it shows a similar mathematical structure, suggesting the lattice models capture the essential physics.
So lattice and continuum models agree on the basics.
Seems so. And the Rayleigh model, fixed step length, also points to similar asymptotic behavior. The overall picture from the ladder expansions is these two types of terms. Bulk terms proportional to n, and exponent term scaling like n lambda 1, reflecting that change in critical behavior.
Okay, wow. That was quite a journey through that paper. So let's try to boil down the main takeaways.
Okay, I'd say first that cluster expansion for interacting polymers is fundamentally different because it's expanding around a critical point, W0, where exponents change.
Right, not a smooth expansion.
Second, the simple two-parameter theory is really just an approximation that works best for weak interactions, small w.
Good for starters, but limited.
Third, summing up those ladder diagrams is powerful. It connects directly to the spherical model of magnetism and helps understand how the system transitions to the new set of exponents characteristic of self-avoiding walks.
The ladder graphs capture the exponent shift.
And fourth, in three dimensions, the non-ladder, more complex interactions might introduce subtle logarithmic corrections to the standard power law scaling.
Those tricky logs. Okay.
Yeah, those are probably the big ones.
And bringing it back to our listeners, why does this deep dive matter?
Well, fundamentally, these models help us understand how long-chain molecules polymers behave. Their size, their shape, how they respond to their environment. That's crucial for materials science, you know, designing plastics and rubbers with specific properties.
Yeah, sure.
And it's vital in biophysics, too. Think about protein folding, DNA packing. These are huge polymer chains where self-interactions are everything.
Yeah.
Understanding the basic principles helps unravel those complex biological processes.
And the magnet connection.
That's just fascinating, right? It shows these deep underlying mathematical structures that connect seemingly totally different parts of the physical world. Statistical mechanics finds these universal patterns.
It really does. Okay, so a final thought to leave our listeners chewing on.
Well, given all this complexity, this shift in exponents, the limitations of simple theories, and especially the potential for those subtle logarithmic corrections in 3D, it makes you wonder, how precisely do we know the critical exponents for real polymers?
Right. We measure them, we simulate them, but are we capturing everything?
Exactly. What further theoretical breakthroughs or maybe even more powerful computer simulations do we need to really nail down these fine details? How perfectly does our current understanding map onto the messy reality of a polymer swimming in a solvent?
It's that constant interplay between theory, simulation, and experiment, a great place to pause and reflect.
Indeed. It shows there are still fascinating fundamental questions hidden in these seemingly well-studied systems.